Garda equipment is pitiful, morale is very low, assaults on members of the force are increasing, and there isn't the required nationwide level of manpower to provide the public proper service. So the Garda Representative Association conference, which is underway in Westport County Mayo, is being told. As the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, attends today to say that she will be introducing some measures of facial recognition for the on Garda Síochána. And elsewhere we hear of Garda complaints saying that officers often have to wait up to an hour or more for armed support units to attend serious incidents. Garda John Joe O'Connell is based here in Nace. He's Kildare representative of the Garda Representative Association, and he's at the conference in Westport. Good morning, John Joe.
Good morning, Clem.
Garda equipment is pitiful. Morale is very low. That paints a very dismal picture. Is that scaremongering? Is it just ringing the alarm bells because it's the annual conference, John Joe?
No, well, I suppose, look, first and foremost, there's about 160 delegates here, elected representatives for members across the country in attendance here at the, it's actually the 44th annual delegate conference here in Westport, and conference is the main policy-making decision for forum for our association. So we've 32 items on the agenda here over the for the 2 days yesterday and today, and they cover everything from pay and conditions to welfare to discipline matters and equipment and everything in between. So all that together with these motions which actually stem from district AGMs 5-6 months ago, these paint a picture of where members are desperately seeking resources, desperately seeking modernisation, proper equipment, and, you know, top of the list is proper pay.
All right, so, let's start with some of those. Let's start with some of those aspects, and let's deal with morale. Later in this program, in this hour, we're going to be speaking to representatives of PD Fora about they being able to go to the table finally with the Irish Congress of Trade Unions for pay negotiations. We've spoken with them and RACO in the past about the Defence Force's bleeding personnel. Your conference heard from your president, Frank Thornton, that up to 400 Gardaí are expected to retire alone this year, and only 200 recruits will pass out of Templemore to replace them. I suppose two aspects to that. One, that's only 50% replacement. But of those 400 Gardaí retiring, surely the vast majority of those are retiring because they're at the age of retirement and can draw the pension. Are they retiring, on, as you state, because of low morale?
Right. Well, the compulsory retirement age of Garda Síochána is 60 years of age, right? But once you attain 30 years service, you can retire at that stage. So we have, like, down through the years, you know, most members, vast majority of members would stay beyond, because if the China Garda Síochána at 22 years of age, you know, many people weren't going to retire at 52. It just wasn't a thing. But now, like, definitely, and I can speak because there's members in the Kildare Division have told me, John Joe, I'm hitting 30 year service next February, next July, I'm gone. The job, it's a different job, and all these aspects that I've already mentioned are hitting some of these people hard, and they're saying, no, the pay isn't worth it. Pace and reflecting the dangers that I face every day, the pace and reflecting life as it is, like even to be honest about it, and a Garda Síochána alone with the other public sector, among the public sector, is that during the building momentum pay agreement last year, you got 3%, right? The country was in the middle of COVID and on its knees, quote unquote. But the 3% looks fairly pitiful now when you look at the rate of inflation, which is at 6% in excess.
And that applies to everybody,
yes.
But just can I say, John Joe, that you mentioned the age of retirement there is 60.
Yeah.
The compulsory.
Yeah.
And after 30 years, you can go, which could see people out at 50, 51, 52, as you say.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying people are leaving because of morale, saying I'm getting out of here. Yet your conference is hearing a motion today to have the retirement, compulsory retirement age extended to 65. Bit of a
Perfect.
Contradiction there, is there not?
Yeah, no, there's not. No. That motion was actually voted on yesterday and passed unanimously. It's actually, it's to allow people, because we have a demographic now that has changed vastly since, to be honest with you, since I joined the Guards in the mid-90s, where we have members now who are joining at 33, 34, 35 years of age. And that is to allow those members to achieve their 30 years of reckoning with service, where they can then, they can retire with a pension. That is what that is about, just to address that, Clem.
I understand that. Now, the comparison is made with Scotland, where there are 17,243 police officers. Here in Ireland, we've just about 14,000. And yet your conference is being told that the government had committed to 15,000. And as we said a minute or two ago, 400 retiring this year, only 200 coming out from Templemore.
Yeah, and also I'll give you another stat, which is it's increasing. Definitely, it's noticeable in the last 12 months, 24 months. We have about 100 members have resigned in the last 12 months. Now, that is unprecedented, as far as I'm aware. With the numbers that we have, there was this magical figure. I think it was one of the Ministers for Justice, Minister Flanagan, a few years ago, had this magical figure of 21-21, which would be 21,000 people employed in the Garda Síochána. Employed in the Garda Síochána by the year 2021. So that hasn't been achieved. We had promises over the years where the target was reached of 800 new recruits every year into Templemore. That would be roughly 200 new guards, new young men and women joining the force every 3 months. We have been told that there's only 25 have joined the Garda Síochána down in Templemore in the last intake. So that will be, we will be way off the 800 mark which we've been promised.
Okay.
And so that then, with all those figures, you know, I don't want to bore anyone here, but that leaves then an extra workload when we have the retirements, when we have the resignations, when we don't have the coming in at the rates we are promised. And on top of all that, we have extra accountability. We're more scrutinised than any other organisation.
Okay, right, just hold up.
Just to say, we do accept accountability, we do accept oversight, but the amount of oversight in the Garda Síochána now has gone to the stage where I'd say it's hard for us to do our job.
Okay, speaking about being hard to do your job, I heard reports over the last couple of days and I wondered, I said, no, we're not talking about the Keystone Cops here, we're talking about Ireland's on Garda Síochána.
Yeah.
This scenario where Garda, members of an Garda Síochána cannot pursue, for example, drunk drivers, speeding drivers, or even turn on your blue lights unless you have been trained to drive a Garda patrol car. I would have assumed, and I'm sure every single member of the public out there would have assumed, that driving a Garda patrol car and the ability to pursue people, whether they be speeding or drunk or robbers or whatever else, would be the type of training given to every single recruit in on Garda Síochána.
Yes. Now, so where we're going with that is there is different, levels of driver training within a Garda Síochána.
Yeah, but is there a scenario in an Garda Síochána, is there a scenario where Gardaí can be driving a Garda vehicle and they're not allowed to turn on the blue lights or pursue the types of individuals I've talked about?
Yes. Now, and this is the scandal. So the current driver training in a Garda Síochána is competency-based driving, CBD. So you have CBD1, CBD2, CBD3, and on so forth. Now, CBD1 is a very short driving course, which is to basically that somebody's able to drive from A to B.
They go in the first place.
And so that was mainly to facilitate people who were doing non-confrontational duties, i.e. serving summonses, executing warrants, jobs like that, important jobs like that. But CPD2 then is a standard driving course where you're trained to a level where which would allow you to pursue vehicles, activate blue lights. But those members who undergo CPD1, which is now there's a huge number of guards behind the wheels of normal patrol cars in Naas, Robertstown, Athy, Leixlip, driving under CPD1, and part of the criteria when you finish that course is you sign off and you say, I will not activate blue lights and sirens, I will not basically break the rules of the road. Okay, now, so we have a circumstances where there are members trying to get to burglaries, very serious and dangerous incidents that the members of the public face, and those members are told by supervisors to stand down and not pursue that vehicle, to stand down, not activate blue lights, and this is a daily occurrence.
And John Joe, has there been an incident where a Garda has been disciplined, or at least disciplinary proceedings are ongoing regarding a Garda who turned on the blue lights in a Garda vehicle at an accident scene to warn oncoming drivers to slow down, and he's subject to disciplinary proceedings because he wasn't deemed qualified to turn on the blue lights? For God's sake, John Joe, this sounds like something that's so bizarre people can hardly believe it.
And I suppose what from that, what we're looking for is the resources and the budget to be put in place where the guards who are driving patrol cars in Kildare, in Waterford, in Donegal, are trained to the standard to which allows them to do that. So it's, you know, I don't know what the answer is. Is it, like you said, guard recruits should be trained coming out of the college? That's a scenario that we would...
Well, I would always have assumed, John Joe, and I've often seen you on your motorbike and everything else, and I see the other Gardaí, and we'll be talking later on. Indeed, we won't be discussing this, obviously, with him, but Garda Ronan Mannion will be with us later on Crime Time on the programme. I and every other member of the public would have assumed that when we see a Garda in uniform or plain clothes in a Garda vehicle, we assume they can do the most basic thing, like turn on the blue lights, for God's sake. Because, you know, if you want to let our imagination run wild, we could have people flying by then, Garda patrol cars, because the Gardaí are not permitted to chase after them or turn on the blue light, people with smiles on their face and effectively giving two fingers to the force. It's so bizarre as to be almost incredible.
Yeah, the irony of it is, Clem, is that those members have, you know, sign up to protect life and property as part of their job.
Yeah.
But then they have to second guess themselves. If I turn on the blue lights here, I am... open to discipline and sanction within the Garda Síochána.
I'm sorry for laughing, but this sounds so ridiculous and bizarre that it could elicit the remark that it could only happen in Ireland. Because
so the resolution we're looking for is just the budget and resources to be put in place to train our members,
all right,
train them to a standard which is safe to be able to police the roads and streets of Kildare and across the country, you know.
All right, on that note, you have a lot of other serious issues, I know, in regards to pay, conditions, morale, as you say, equipment being pitiful, but I think that just struck the bottom line altogether, that people would think, you know, this kind of thing only happens in comedy films, that Gardaí are not allowed to put on their blue lights. The Minister for Justice is addressing you today. She says she's going to introduce facial recognition technology to enable Gardaí to conduct rapid automated searches for suspects in criminal investigations. While the Irish Council for Civil Liberties says it's strongly opposed to the use of facial recognition technology in law enforcement, the GRA is giving it a cautious welcome, looking for the details. John Joe, we'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks very much,
and good luck with the rest of your conference. That's Garda John Joe O'Connell, who is the Kildare representative in the Kildare Gardaí for the Garda Representative Association, speaking to us live from their annual conference in Westport. But lads, yes, can you actually believe that scenario pertains in an Garda Síochána, that there are quite a number of Gardaí there who can be sitting in a Garda vehicle, not allowed to turn on the blue lights because they could be open to discipline proceedings? What does it take to turn on the blue lights? The same as turning on your headlights. And I mean, the Garda who's been subjected to disciplinary proceedings because he turned on his blue lights to warn oncoming motorists of an incident, and he wasn't permitted to do so because he wasn't trained to flick the switch. That's ridiculous. Absolutely nonsensical.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Some of your messages now. No service obligation for on-street telephones, says a listener. In regards to that, another listener says old phone booths can be used for free books where people leave books for swaps, says Chair. Never heard that one before, Chair. And no service obligation on street payphones since 2021. Yeah, all this training should be done in Templemore, where the junior spends years training. Like another listener says in regards to this, Jesus, I don't believe what I'm hearing. I thought the army was bad at times. What a laugh. Now, when you say the army's bad, you're talking about in terms of some of the issues the guards have, says a listener in regards to that. But a am I alone? Am I the only person in this country who would have assumed that every time I see a Garda driving a patrol car, I'm assuming they're trained to drive that car? If they want to go after a speeding driver, I assume they're trained to go after the speeding driver. I assume they're trained to turn on their blue lights, whatever the thing. I mean, so we can have Gardaí sitting in vehicles. This is so unfair to members of An Garda Síochána and so bizarre and ridiculous that it has to be addressed. That you have Gardaí sitting in Garda vehicles who could witness criminality and can't undertake doing anything about it, because I'm not trained to drive this car any faster than I'm not trained to turn on my blue lights. It sounds like the Keystone Cops, the silent movie films, and that's not meant towards An Garda Síochána, the rank and file members. It's meant towards anybody who presides over a system that's letting Gardaí out of Temple Moor after their 2 years training, and that they do not possess the full expertise and qualifications to drive their vehicles and turn on the blue lights. Hi, the girls and boys of the Hedgehog Club in Clain say a huge thank you to Garda Shane, who came to visit them last night. We all enjoyed it. Happy hedgehogs, they say. I take it that's Garda Shane Smith, is it, that is often with us on the programme here. Now, speaking of morale being low on Garda Síochána, as we heard from Garda John Joe Connell there, and speaking about equipment being pitiful, etc., etc., I put it to John Joe that many of the things on Garda Síochána were complaining about, we've heard over the last couple of years from members of our defence forces as well, whether they be RACO officers, commissioned officers, are the rank and file represented by PD Fora, whose president Mark Keane joins us now. Good morning, Mark, and thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thanks very much, Ken, and to your listeners.
Right,
good morning.
I'm talking about the bizarre situation of Gardaí not being permitted to drive their Garda vehicles or turn on their blue lights unless they've received a specific type of training called CB2 or CBD3. Can you tell me that finally it was confirmed yesterday that you're getting what's called temporary affiliation to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions for the purpose of pay negotiations, that you first brought up this at a conference 27 years ago, back in 1995?
Yes, very much indeed, Clem. It is a historic day, as we said throughout the course of the day yesterday. It goes back further, actually, Clem. It goes back as far as 1994, when we first took a motion to our conference and our delegate conference to seek affiliation to ICTU. And then it was in 1995 that ICTU itself amended its constitution to allow affiliation for Peter Forrest to join ICTU. And if I may, I'd like to award a thanks to your good self as well for all your efforts and your help through many, many years on this subject. So it'd be remiss of me not to acknowledge that as well. So a heartfelt thank you.
Thank you indeed. That's very much appreciated, Mark. We do our best here to profile on behalf of the organisations like yourselves and An Garda Síochána, who are endeavouring to serve us under the most difficult of conditions. Now, Mark, a couple of questions about the affiliation. It's been described as temporary, and is it restrictive as well in terms of it's only for the specific purpose of pay negotiations?
The devil is in the detail, and what I mean by that is that it is temporary because we're citizens in uniform, that we're an armed element of the state, that we bear the arms, you know, and we serve the state and we take an oath of allegiance. They have to amend DFRS 6, which for your listeners is Defence Forces Regulation S6. That is what governs PD4A. That's what allowed PD4A to be set up in 1990. That allowed us to form our organisation. That has to be amended to reflect the new situation, and the new situation is that PD4A has finally become affiliated to ICTU. So it is temporary until the Minister amends the legislation. So here's for that.
Yeah, and the Minister issued a statement yesterday, and I'll quote from it. He says, "I note the complex nature of this issue, and there will be a requirement for a range of matters to be resolved for a longer term facilitation by government to ensure that ultimately the state's ability to control and direct its armed forces remains absolute, and that any eventual solution in this regards retains that certainty." Now, couched in that very fine language, Mark Keane, I would infer from it that the Minister is concerned that you might go on strike down the line.
Yes, that seemed to be muted over many, many years, and we've said this both publicly and privately to the Minister and the Department, and indeed the General Staff. Our members, the members I represent in Peter Fora, take the oath of allegiance to the state very serious. They have never and never will seek the right to strike or withdraw labour. We fully undertake our obligations under the Constitution as well. We are not seeking any right to strike or not to cross picket lines or to engage in any form of industrial action. Irish Congress trade unions have amended our constitution accordingly, and we've also enshrined it in our constitution, and we've also given undertakings to the minister, to both the previous minister and this minister, the current minister, that would never happen.
And why is the minister then saying that this is a temporary consent for PD Fora, and he's indicating that he'll give the same temporary consent to RACO, the Officers Association? Why temporary then? What are you going to do after the current pay negotiations?
See, the word temporary came about because, as we all know, the next round of pay talks is imminent. Today's 24th. It's due very quickly, so we're looking at pay talks in June. If this wasn't done straight away, we would be outside of the tent again, as to speak. So to get us in there for those pay talks, which is something that we've long campaigned for, this had to be a temporary measure until such time as the minister can then bring the proposed legislation to amend it to both houses of the Oireachtas.
So is this real progress for you, Mark, finally, after that 27-28-year campaign?
Most certainly is. As far as we're concerned, it's a historic date, it's a historic occasion. We finally take our place amongst the other trade unions' representative bodies. For a long time, we had no influence on our own pay and our own conditions of service, which is something that was alien to many, many people. We now finally have, after, you say, 27, 28 years, an opportunity to go in there and to negotiate on behalf of our members and, most importantly, their families.
It is affiliation, is the word being used, for the purpose of pay talks. It's not membership, though, of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions.
It's not full membership in the sense that we can only be affiliated, which is something that we perfectly welcome. It's perfectly understandable because we cannot have the same rights as a full trade union body.
Like, which would be to strike, which you're absolutely taking off the table. But listen, congratulations
to
you, Mark, to your General Secretary, Ger Guinan. Over the years, indeed, we have continuously profiled your cases because we are here in the heart of the Defence Forces in County Kildare, and good luck with those pay talks.
Many thanks again, Clem, and thank you again.
Not at all. That's the president of PD Fora, which represents the rank and file members of the Defence Forces, Mark Keane. And the General Secretary of RACO, Conor King, who's on holidays at the moment, but he's given us a statement in regards to their view. It says, RACO congratulates our sister association, PD Fora, on their long-sought and hard-won achievement of associate membership with the Irish Congress of Trade Unions and hopes to join them without delay. We're disappointed that the Minister has not yet provided consent to RACO, and that the department is seeking to take RACO to court to achieve a similar conditional agreement as that signed with PD Fora. RACO has been excluded from these discussions by the Department of Defence, and as the association was not a party to ongoing litigation. Therefore, as we have not taken any legal action, RACO hopes and expects to achieve agreement without delay on associate membership of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, with any reasonable conditions that the Minister for Defence may wish to place on the association through the Permanent Defence Forces Conciliation and Arbitration Scheme. And that statement issued on behalf of Common and Conor King, General Secretary of the Representative Commissioned Officers Organisation, by Joanne Sweeney. So that's the view. The Minister has indicated that RACO will be given the same temporary affiliation right as has been granted to PD Fora, and we wish them luck with their pay negotiation.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Johnny Hickey at Old Courtis High says, regarding the Garda blue lights, facial recognition, etc., I remember Michael Noonan, the Minister for Justice at the time, talking about introducing helicopters when there wasn't even a decent squad car available that might bring you from one place to another. I guess not much has changed, says John. I mean, I don't want to be labouring the fact, but can you imagine the frustration of Gardaí out there? And, you know, they come in for a lot of criticism. The guards weren't there. Now we might know why they weren't there when something happened, because they weren't allowed to be there. Being stood down, can you believe it? Hey, Garda radios back to his Garda station and says, hey, Super, or Sarge, there's a guy just gone by me there at 140 kilometres an hour. Or there's a guy here drunk driving. He's just gone by me. I'm in the patrol car at Point X. Or I see a suspected robber go by. Don't you dare chase him. You're not qualified to drive after them. You're stand down. Can you imagine the frustration of guards, men and women, sitting in the patrol cars and say, well, I can't do anything about that. Maybe it answers a lot of questions, but it has to be one of the most bizarre things that I ever heard in relation to that scenario. Congratulations. I was serving at the time. Too late for us. It's retired, says Jay. I presume you're talking about the Defence Forces in regards to that. Now, Owen, we have more on that terrible shooting. We'll be going by to Ungarda Síochána for crime time in a couple of minutes' time. But, or crime watch even. Owen, you have a little more audio on that terrible shooting in Uvalde in the United States.
Yeah, US President Joe Biden called for Americans to stand up against the country's powerful pro-gun lobby after a gunman shot dead 19 children and 2 adults at an elementary school in Texas. Joe Biden says, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? This one was an address that he made in the White House. The attack in Uvalde, a small community about an hour from the Mexican border, is the latest in a spree of deadly shootings in the US, where horror at the cycle of gun violence has failed to spur action to end it. And as I mentioned earlier, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, addressing a news conference, said the 18-year-old gunman was believed to have shot his grandmother before heading to Robb Elementary School at around noon, abandoning his vehicle and entering with a handgun and also possibly a rifle. So this is the audio then that I'll play, Clem, in here from Joe Biden on this address that he made from the White House.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done? It's been 3,448 days, 10 years since I stood up at a high school in Connecticut, a grade school in Connecticut, where another gunman massacred 26 people, including 20 first graders at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Since then, there have been over 900 incidents of gunfires reported on school grounds. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Santa Fe High School in Texas. Oxford High School in Michigan. The list goes on and on, and the list grows when it includes mass shootings at places like movie theaters, houses of worship, as we saw just 10 days ago, at a grocery store in Buffalo, New York. I am sick and tired of it. We have to act. And don't tell me we can't have an impact on this carnage. I spent my career as a senator and a vice president working to pass common sense gun laws. We can and won't prevent every tragedy, but we know they work and have positive impact. When we passed the assault weapons ban, mass shootings went down. When the law expired, mass shootings tripled. The idea that an 18-year-old kid can walk into a gun store and buy 2 assault weapons is just wrong. What in God's name do you need an assault weapon for except to kill someone? Deer aren't running through the forest with Kevlar vests on, for God's sake. It's just sick. And the gun manufacturers have spent 2 decades aggressively marketing assault weapons, which make them the most and largest profit. For God's sake, we have to have the courage to stand up to the industry.
Yeah, US President Joe Biden speaking there in an address at the White House, and we heard earlier from Senator Chris Murphy as well. He's speaking in the Senate. He was basically calling for a middle ground to be found to try and bring in legislation between the Republicans and the Democrats with regards to gun laws. And there was also some footage as well, Clem, that I saw on social media. Heartbreaking footage from the scene showing small groups of children weaving through parked cars and yellow buses, some of them holding hands as they fled under their police escort from the school, which teaches students aged around 7 to 10 years of age.
I watched it last night on Sky and BBC as it was breaking, and on ITV. It was just horrific, horrific beyond belief and comment. But Joe Biden sums it up there. I mean, how can an 18-year-old walk into a store, buy two assault rifles? These are war weapons, automatic weapons. How can that happen? And when it happens, because it's legal in the United States, in many, many states, and the gun lobby has a lot to answer for.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Nace. We keep it secure and safe 24 hours a day. 045 408 300.
And Ciara is joined by Garda Ronan Mannion of Nace Garda Station.
Yes, good morning to you, Ronan. We're going to begin with the 17th of May. Two different burglaries. One at the Green Earl's Court in Kill and one in Monreed Heights in Nace. And they both occurred late in the afternoon between 4:40 and 5:20 that day.
That's correct, Ciara. There was burglaries at both locations, one at Monreed Heights and one at the Green and Earl's Court in Kill. The one in Monreed Heights in Nace, there was a couple of very distinctive items that were taken in that. There was a white Tommy Hilfiger watch, a gold sovereign ring, and also a gold clatter ring. There were very distinctive items taken in this burglary. But as I said, it's both burglaries happened late afternoon, sorry, early evening. We'd appeal for any witnesses, anyone who saw anything suspicious at those locations, to contact their local Garda station.
The next afternoon, the 18th, at about 3:30, there was another burglary in Strafford.
That's correct. It's a similar time here in the afternoon again, 3:30 p.m. at Turnings in Strafford. Then there was another burglary took place at a residential property there. Again, we would appeal to people who've noticed cars hanging around to have a look back at dash cams, any CCTV people might have on their houses, just if they see anything suspicious, any suspicious vehicles or people hanging around, to maybe have a look back over it.
And finally, we're going to touch on a burglary in Newbridge, Roseville Court. That was on the night of the 22nd into the, on the night of the 21st into the 22nd.
That's correct. Between 6:30 p.m. and 1:20 a.m. in the morning. And this burglary here, there was a large number of mobile phones that were taken, quite a few of them Samsung. So again, if anyone has been offered a Samsung phone or offered a phone from somewhere that is not reputable, the Gardaí in Newbridge would really appreciate a call in relation to that.
Now, I know you want to...
For any of these numbers, the Garda confidential line, we can contact them 1-800-666-111 or else contact Nace Newbridge Garda stations.
Okay, great. Look, listen, Ronan, I know you want to touch on security in the summer months when it comes to the windows, etc.
I suppose every year we say the same thing. Just, I know people, the evenings are getting warmer, people are leaving windows open. And also, I suppose with this year in particular, a lot of people are going to be travelling again after a 3-year hiatus because of circumstances. It's just have somebody there, keep an eye on your premises. Don't post building up. Just keep the premises looked as if it is kept in. Close the blinds in the evening, maybe turn on a few lights. Have a neighbour that you trust, just to make the house look like it's lived in.
And Ronan, I know you want to briefly touch on the Kildare Youth Awards.
Here, this is again, it's after 3 years. We're delighted to have it back now. The launch of the Kildare Garda Youth Awards for 2022. The awards will take place in Newbridge on the 16th of September and basically celebrating outstanding young people between the ages of 13 and 21. There's an awful lot of good work being done by these people in the community, and they should be recognised and awarded for this. There are a number of different categories. There's an overall winner for the Kildare, then there's district award winners for each Kildare, Nace and Leixlip. There's a group one, and then a special achievement award. Here, these people have been forgotten. An awful lot have done an awful lot of work over the last 3 years, helping the communities, helping people. There's entry forms can be collected from a local Garda station for juvenile liaison officers in each district. But you can also go onto the Kildare Garda Division Facebook page, and you can submit your nominations electronically online from that, or else you can download forms from it.
Okay, thank you, Garda Ronan Mannion of Nace Garda Station.
Thanks, Ciara.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Nace. PSA licensed. 045 408 300 or manguardplus.ie.
Okay, just to wrap up with two items. Times Ireland Online today has an interesting article by Sophia Tutty. And it's an historian has discovered that these 260 slave owners in South Carolina in the 1800s were Irish born, and said the number is just the tip of the iceberg. Martine Brennan from Kerry was researching Ireland's involvement in the slave trade. Now, this in the context of today's Africa Africa Day has been celebrated right around the world. A DNA test had revealed that Martin Brennan from Kerry had a distant African-American cousin in South Carolina. She says as she researched it, she came across other Irish people who also discovered distant relatives that were African-Americans, she told The Times. It became very evident to me that while some of these relationships may have been consensual, where races mixed, many were not, as they aged back to the 1800s when a clear power dynamic was at play. The African American Irish Diaspora Network is a US-based organization. It estimates that about 38%, I'll repeat that, 38% of African Americans have some Irish ancestry. Can you believe that? As we celebrate Africa Day here in Ireland and around the world as well. Her researchers included Pierce Butler, who was a Carlow man, who signed the US Constitution in 1787. He was one of the wealthiest slave owners in South Carolina. He was a US senator and was involved, as I say, widely from that in the slave trade. It's a very interesting article and well worth reading and referring to on this day where it's Africa Day throughout the world. 38% of Irish people have ancestry linked to African Americans. Or sorry, to put that the other way around, 38% of African Americans have some Irish ancestry.